Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan and South Sudan this Wednesday, April 24th, 2024. Motorbike taxi operators save lives in South Sudan's Yei town.
When relatives were checked, their blood did not match the child's blood. That time I was coming from school, so I decided to get checked and our blood matched. So I donated my blood to save the life of that child.
And a U.S.-based nonprofit puts smiles on faces of some children in South Sudan.
I request that the public should continue voluntarily do referral for these patients because that's the only way we can access them. Otherwise, without their voluntary support, we cannot access these patients.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Around 90 children have received free cleft lip surgeries at Juba Teaching Hospital, courtesy of an American medical nonprofit, Samaritan's Pulse. The program coordinator for the group's cleft lip and cataracts program says more needs to be done to reach children born with the condition in remote parts of South Sudan. Juliana Shiapai was in Juba and has more on this from Yambio.
Bijali Justin is the national coordinator for the Samaritan Path Cleft Lips and Cataracts Program. He says parents of children with cleft lips should be encouraged to seek treatment. Cleft lip is a birth defect in which a baby's mouth and lips don't form properly during their mother's pregnancy. Children with the problem can have difficulties eating and speaking and may need special care, but the problem can be corrected with the surgery. Justin says Samaritan's Path recently performed free corrective surgery on 90 children with the conditions at Juba Teaching Hospital.
I request that the public should continue voluntarily do referral for these patients because that's the only way we can access them. Otherwise, without their voluntary support, we cannot access these patients. At least for them to have this message that cleft can be fixed so that we move them from the idea that once you have a child with a cleft, it will not be fixed. So Samaritan Pass is here to provide that hope that cleft can be fixed and these children will go back with their smiles fix again.
Adut Madok brought her grandchild all the way from the Lake State for the surgery in Juba. She says she has raised the child alone because the mother abandoned the baby.
When the mother gave birth to him and saw that the baby has a cleft lips, she immediately left at the hospital and I remained with the baby. And because I didn't have a big support and I could not raise him alone, I had to move to school. We live there. I sweep the compound and at least they could provide milk for my grandson and they give us a room. I do the cleaning and they give me something small to support him. So I got the information from the school where somebody told me that there are people who can do this. And I immediately went to the hospital and I registered and they called me to come to Juba, whereby they did the operation. It went successfully and I'm happy for it. I will raise him as the only child of mine, as the way I raised the father.
Rehema Shamim is a Ugandan who lived in South Sudan for 2 years. She says her third child, who was born in Juba, has a cleft lip.
That's why I'm here. So now they have already do the operation. The baby is really looking nice. So I'm also happy, very happy, because I cannot change the wills of God. It's okay. I'm so happy, really happy, because my baby looks very handsome the way he is. I wish you could have seen him, but he's fine. I'm also fine.
Karen Daniels is a Samaritan Purse nurse and a program manager for cleft in South Sudan. She says Juba Teaching Hospital's team supports Samaritan Path annual free surgery. Daniels says her organization is exploring avenues to reach more children and adults with the condition.
There's plenty of cleft lips to be done here. We're returning in August with a target of about 90 as well once again. And we just want people to know that there's hope for this cleft lip and palate surgery. You know, so many times the stories we hear of such despair that they've been rejected and abandoned by everybody. Often the grandmothers are the ones that rescue these kids and bring them to us, and we've seen that again this week.
Samaritan's Path perform free surgeries to repair cleft lips and also to remove eye cataracts twice a year in South Sudan. The U.S. nonprofit plans to carry out more surgeries at Juba Teaching Hospital in August. For VOA News, I'm Juliana Shapai in Yambio.
Still on some good news, residents of Yei Town in central Equatorial State say they want to save more lives by donating blood at Yei Civil Hospital. Motorbike taxi operators known as Border Border, who take patients to the town's hospital, say they have been donating blood to women with complicated pregnancies, patients with gunshot wounds, and others needing transfusions. They donate despite myths many South Sudanese believe about blood donations. For VOA News, Viola Elias has been to Yei Town and has this report from Juba.
Lawrence Karaba, a motorcycle taxi operator in Yei County of Central Equatoria State, says he is prepared to save more lives of patients who need blood donation at Yei Civil Hospital. Karaba says he has seen patients who could have lived if there was enough blood at the hospital.
I will maralana bara donate blood if we can.
The first time I donated blood, there was a child brought to hospital from the village, and when relatives were checked, their blood did not match the child's blood. That time I was coming from school, so I decided to get checked and our blood matched. So I donated my blood to save the life of that child. Since that time, the child's mother was happy with me, and I'm even happy that the child I donated blood to is not going to help me, but he is going to help the country.
Ghana, like an beside the bullet.
The World Health Organization says health workers in South Sudan are struggling to fight cultural stigma around blood donations. Many people in the country think giving blood will cause disease or even death. Bosco Gama is a motorcycle taxi or border border operator in Yei Town. He says he and other operators have rescued many people who needed blood at the hospital.
Sometimes we look at the pregnant mothers brought alone from the villages wanting to give birth or to be operated on and don't have relatives. That is why we, the Border Border guys at the stage here, are sacrificing to donate our blood to save the lives of people. There are people saying that we are selling the blood, but that is not true. It is important to donate blood because you will get to know your status and health.
Yei resident Joyce Awate speaks from personal experience. She says patients who are in dire need of blood transfusion often face problems.
The issues of blood here is a big problem. They look for people to donate blood, and if you don't have anybody, they would not survive. They are looking for people, including the border guys, to get blood. Like me, who has been sick here, if they didn't save me with blood, I would have been dead by now.
Mary Kiden says she traveled 18 miles to reach Yei Civil Hospital after her 18-year-old daughter sustained gunshot injuries over the weekend. Kiden says her daughter lost a lot of blood and the doctors recommended a blood transfusion to save her life.
So my blood was screened and that of my daughter Madge. Then they transfused my blood to her. Her situation is getting better compared to when we arrived here. She is feeling pain from the gunshot wound. She was shot 6 times.
Mambo George is a laboratory officer at Yei Blood Bank. He says motorbike taxi operators have saved many lives in Yei Town.
When the person doesn't have donor, this is where we go to them. We use also to convince them, like the patients that are from, let me say, from the villages, good enough, they're just alone, they're senior alone.
James Utama is the head of Blood Bank at Yei Civil Hospital. He says a lack of functional refrigerators and supplies to screen blood hurts the supply at the hospital. He says the hospital is overwhelmed by hundreds of patients who come for treatment from villages across Yei County.
This year I see so many cases that are registered, but it goes sometimes up to 100 cases which I see really. People are in greater suffer here in this hospital because this hospital is not just county hospital. People from Lanya, Morobo, Lasu and Tore, all those people are referred to this hospital.
Utama is calling on health partners in South Sudan to donate refrigerators and spread the word about importance of blood donation at Yei Civil Hospital. For VOA News, I am Viola Elias reporting from Juba.
From Juba, we go to Malawi, where the government there is asking its development partners to try something new to help the country's most vulnerable women and girls get out of extreme poverty. Besides enhancing their socioeconomic status, a new three-year program will strengthen their resilience to crisis, shocks, and disasters. Lamek Masina reports for VOA from Blantyre.
The UN Children Agency, UNICEF, and the Irish government say more than 20% of Malawi's 19.6 million people live in extreme poverty. They said Tuesday women had over 75% of all families living in poverty amid violence and harmful practices that undermine their participation in economic activities. The new gender empowerment and resilience program is expected to benefit more than 500,000 people in 9 districts, giving them access to social services and cash transfers. The districts are Nzimba, Njewu, Balaka, Chikwawa, Mulanje, Mwanza, Neno, Msanje, and Zomba. Shadrack Omo is UNICEF representative in Malawi. He says experience has shown that parents and caregivers need to be supported with livelihoods and resources to support their children.
That's why this program, which is supported by the Malawi government, European Union and UNICEF, is extremely important, because through this program, we'll be working with the parents to support them to have the right livelihoods and incomes to support their children to grow to their full potential.
About $26 million is being spent to tackle challenges that would help give Malawi women access to economic opportunities and essential social services. Besides cash transfers, the program will help promote access to social behavior change, nutrition, early childhood development, sexual reproductive health, and prevention of gender-based violence. Minister of Gender, Community Development and Social Welfare, Jean Sendeza, says in a statement that Malawi has previously made progress in expanding social protections to reach more vulnerable people. However, she says significant gender gaps remain. NLS Pemba is the executive director for Chikundi Girls Project in southern Malawi. She welcomes the program, but says similar interventions haven't yielded results in the past because of a tendency of imposing solutions without even asking what people really want.
Because we feel like sometimes a girl child just wants money. But well, there are a lot of issues that are happening. For example, when you talk about mental health issues, a girl child, maybe the parent is sick, both of them, or they don't have food at home, like we are facing like hunger in Malawi now.
Pemba, whose project teaches girls how to make sanitary pads and other skills, says there is a need to encourage entrepreneurship skills in a girl child to help her find food for the whole family.
Because there are other small businesses which she can even do at school, which can be sustainable and for a long time, rather than a project which can just happen maybe for a year and then stays out, and then she can go back to the basics where she was.
Maggie Katewera Banda is executive director for the Women's Legal Resources Center. She says there still are some people who need nothing but spoon feeding to lift them up.
much as we have empowerment programs where people are supposed to have the skills so that they can move out of poverty, but we still have some section of our population which are so vulnerable to the extent that they cannot move out of poverty on their own. They need a booster. So as a starting point, the cash transfers offer such kind of a thing.
Katewera Banda says the impact of some projects may not be seen or felt because they focus on small groups out of thousands of people facing poverty. However, EU Ambassador to Malawi, Rune Skinbach, and Irish Ambassador to Malawi, Seamus O'Grady, said in a statement the program will help create an enabling environment for Malawi women and girls to contribute meaningfully to their communities. Lameki Masina, VOA News, Blantyre.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, refugees and asylum seekers face deportation. Find out why and where after the break.
Hello, listener of South Sudan in Focus. We have an exciting new segment dubbed Words of Wisdom. We want to hear your thoughtful proverbs that echo through your community. This is another chance for you to share wisdom from your roots. All you need to do is record a proverb in a language of your choice, tell us its English translation and what it means. Keep it brief, authentic, and represent your community. Your recorded proverb shall be sampled on South Sudan in Focus every Wednesday. Send your recording via our WhatsApp number, +1 202 630 8011. That is +1 202 630 8011.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Our words of wisdom for today comes from the Jiang community.
Hello, BOA. This is Mayor Angelo Deng presenting a word of wisdom from Edinka land. The proverb goes, in English, it translates, when the pot is on fire, even the laziest become a hard worker. It simply means people work harder when expecting immediate results of their labor. Thanks.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. After years of political wrangling and court battles, British lawmakers passed legislation this week which the government hopes will allow it to deport asylum seekers arriving in small boats across the English Channel to Rwanda for processing. As Henry Ridgewell reports from London, the dangers of the migrants' crossings were underlined just hours after the law was passed.
A grim reminder of the dangers of the migrant journeys across the English Channel. Five people died, including a young child, when an overloaded inflatable dinghy carrying migrants got into difficulties off the French coast Tuesday morning. French authorities say 112 people were on board.
Et malgré cette situation complexe et délicate, 57 personnes.
Jacques Billon, the prefect of the French Pas-de-Calais region, said that despite the complex and delicate situation, 57 people who were still on the inflatable boat remained on board. Not willing to be rescued, they managed to restart the engine and continue their sea route towards Britain, he added. Such is the determination of migrants to reach Britain. Over 6,300 people have made the journey in small boats so far this year. The tragedy came just hours after British lawmakers passed legislation aiming to send to Rwanda all asylum seekers arriving across the English Channel. Migrants would be processed in Rwanda and have no right to return to Britain, even those granted refugee status. The legislation effectively orders the courts to ignore existing British laws or international treaties that could block the deportations. It's not yet clear if further legal challenges could delay the flights. British Prime Minister Rishi Sunak said the prospect of being sent thousands of kilometres away to Rwanda will deter migrants from making the journey to Britain.
The first flight will leave in 10 to 12 weeks. Now, of course, that is later than we wanted, but we have always been clear that processing will take time.
The government argues the policy is moral as it aims to end the dangerous journeys operated by people smugglers. But the United Nations called for Britain to rethink the legislation. Ravina Shamdasani, spokesperson for the United Nations High Commissioner for Human Rights.
By shifting the responsibility for refugees, reducing the UK court's ability to scrutinise removal decisions, restricting access to legal remedies in the UK, and limiting the scope of domestic and international human rights protections for a specific group of people, this new legislation seriously hinders the rule of law in the UK and it sets a perilous precedent globally.
Under the deal, Britain is paying Rwanda at least $458 million over 5 years, with extra payments on top worth tens of thousands of dollars for each migrant sent to the country. The opposition has called it an expensive gimmick that won't work. The passing of the legislation after years of delay is a political victory for Prime Minister Rishi Sunak. Whether the policy deters migrants from making the deadly journeys across the English Channel remains to be seen. Henry Ridgewell, VOA News, London.
Artificial intelligence surrounds US political life, from fundraising to campaign advertising. Some lawmakers are looking to better police the use of generative content in this year's presidential elections, as they say it threatens voter confidence in what is real. VOA's correspondent Scott Stans has the story.
So far, artificial intelligence in this presidential campaign has been most pronounced in the New Hampshire primary, where thousands of voters received a call from a voice sounding like Joe Biden, telling them not to vote.
Voting this Tuesday only enables the Republicans in their quest to elect Donald Trump again.
The fake voice was made by Louisiana magician Paul Carpenter for $150.
If anybody's looking for some kind of flag, not a false flag, but like a flag, a gameplay flag where something bad happened, and I'm the flag.
U.S. Senator Richard Blumenthal says there's no time to wait for another flag.
Disinformation and deepfakes are about to descend on the American public. The form of their arrival will be political ads and other forms of disinformation that are made possible by artificial intelligence. There is a clear and present danger to our democracy.
At a Senate Judiciary Committee hearing on AI in this election last week, Senator Josh Hawley said it's time to act.
The dangers of this technology without guardrails and without safety features are becoming painfully, painfully apparent. And I think the question now is that are we going to have to watch some catastrophe unfold?
It's already possible to detect calls like the one in New Hampshire, says artificial voice generation developer Zohaib Ahmed.
We believe that AI watermarking technology is a readily available solution that can already check the integrity of audio content.
With that technology in place, what's lacking is regulation, says deepfake detection entrepreneur Ben Coleman.
There's a really nice framework in both national and also state level regulations in the space. When you upload something on, for example, YouTube, it's checking for a few things. It's checking for violence. It's checking for underage imagery. It's checking for, are you uploading the latest Drake song? That's because of regulations. So to scan for generative media would just be another check within that same flow.
The U.S. Federal Election Commission is considering rules that would prohibit using AI in ads to deliberately deceive voters. New Hampshire Secretary of State David Scanlon told the Senate committee that unchecked generative AI, like the fake Biden call, threatens voter confidence.
The most fundamental, important thing that I perceive in my role as Secretary of State is to make sure that an election is not messed up, that, you know, the voters believe and know that it was run fairly and accurately to the highest standards possible. And if we lose that, it will be very, very hard to get it back.
In New Hampshire, lawmakers are working to require that political advertising within 90 days of an election disclose if audio, still images, or video have, quote, been manipulated or generated by artificial intelligence technology and depicts speech or conduct that did not occur. Scott Stearns, VOA News.
From issues to do with artificial intelligence, now we go to entertainment. Africa's entertainment industry is another stage where global competition between China and the United States is playing out. African artists see it as an opportunity. Kate Bartlett has details from Johannesburg.
It's 2 in the morning. The club scene is going strong, fueled by the beats of amapiano music.
If you've never heard an amapiano song and you're not from South Africa, when you just hear that sound, it just evokes emotions.
Amapiano is a kind of South African house music that Sean Stylist has been creating for several years. Recently, his work caught the attention of Warner Music. He just signed with the US label, which he hopes will lead him to international fame.
America is a platform. We give it to them. We give them what we have. We give them what is born inside us. And then it goes global.
African music, including amapiano, has been gaining popularity globally, highlighting the entertainment stage where China and the US are competing for soft power. China-Africa expert and investor Aubrey Ruby.
The U.S. has long been competitive in the creative industries. You know, the movie Black Panther did more for the U.S. in Africa than, you know, 10 Chinese premiere trips.
China has dominated investments in the continent's internet infrastructure and mobile phones. The Chinese music streaming app, Boomplay, has gained wide appeal across Africa, says Aubrey Ruby.
So in terms of actual competitive edge, the Chinese have been building infrastructure globally for a long time now. And then, of course, on the phone side, I mean, that's where you see where the Chinese have really innovated to create an affordable smartphone in the form of techno phones.
This ecosystem allows U.S. businesses to invest in the artists.
It is the record labels. It is Netflix. They're doing it because Africans are producing amazing global content.
Investments from the private sector are in line with a U.S. presidential initiative called Prosper Africa, which aims to strengthen U.S.-Africa trade and investment. The initiative recognizes creative industries as one arena that can drive business opportunities. Lisa Walker is with Prosper Africa.
Prosper Africa still feels that American brands are incredibly competitive and incredibly strong. We're not really worried, in a sense, about competitiveness in those areas.
Instead of competition, Ruby says the US and China are actually playing complementary roles in the music industry.
It's not that, you know, if techno phones are in young Africans' hands, that it's hurting American business. In fact, it's probably more facilitating. Bringing the next 100 million, 200 million people online is massively beneficial for American companies.
Regardless of whether the U.S. and China are competing or complementing each other in the creative space, it's African audiences and artists like Stylist who are benefiting from these investments from overseas, with the hope that music will continue to grow as an African export. Kate Bartlett, VOA News, Johannesburg.
We still take you to South Africa with the song Vulindlela by Brenda Fassie. Vulindlela literally means open the way. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and engineer, Saida Hamdun, we wish you a lovely evening. Remember to join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.